Hi everyone, this is Thea and you're listening to Lit Radio Podcast. Today, we welcome Anthony Tasgell, who will tell us about his seventh book, The Classical Marketing Book. Tas spent many years as an ad agency planner before becoming a trainer for various organizations, including the Chartered Institute of Marketing. He is also a TEDx speaker, strategist, and lecturer. The Classical Marketing Book brings 2,000-year-old ideas from the ancient Greeks and Romans to provide creative, enterprising insights into marketing and business today. Hi, Tas. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on Lit Radio Podcast. How are you today?
I'm good. Always a pleasure to talk to you and talk about books. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. So we're today here to talk a lot about your latest book, The Classical Marketing Book. But before we do that, could you share with us how you became so passionate about the classics?
Yeah, this is one of the easiest questions that I can ever answer. Because often it's very complicated. This is really simple. I studied Latin, Greek and ancient history at school. And I studied at university for 4 years. And I loved every second of it. And as my wife and children and friends will tell you, I don't stop talking about the classics. So the only thing really was, and I've always managed to smuggle in bits of Latin, Greek and etymology into the books anyway. So I always said to Martin, look, I think I can probably do something which takes all this together, which looks at what the Romans and Greeks did for us in terms of myths and stories and vocabulary, and actually turn it into a book. And you know, to my pleasure, Martin said yes. So it was a labour of love, really. So it was quite easy from that sense. It was just something I always wanted to do, and there it is. Yeah.
Absolutely. And my second question would have been how you decided to write the book, but yeah, it seems it all came naturally.
It did, and I think given that's number seven, I think, book seven. And a lot of the books I've read, they have very similar themes. So a lot of storytelling, a lot about persuasion, behavioral economics, emotions, and a couple of books about insight. And really all of those themes, again, fed into what the Romans and Greeks talked about, because they talked about how to persuade. They were masters of storytelling. And they wouldn't have used the word insight, but they would have said eureka. So in a sense, all of the things I have written about and talked about had their origin in sort of Greek and Roman sort of mythology and story and philosophy. So again, it felt part of what I was already doing anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we discuss more the content of the book, could you share with us what the writing process for the book was? Because it's your book seven, so we are pretty experienced now. And also if you can give some tips to some aspiring authors who might be listening to us today.
Yeah, I mean, I think over the process of writing, because as you'll know, September, October this year will be 10 years since my first book, the storytelling book. So 10 years, that always feels a long time. Having written seven books in 10 years, I've sort of come across my process, I think, largely by accident. And this is what I tell people who want to write books. If you can find something you're interested in or passionate about, and you can find something that you can say which you think is going to be interesting and different, I think that's the start point. And then what I always recommend, and I'm sorry to plug my own, you know, ideas, what I call the golden thread, is you write out that thread. Because I think otherwise, and I've seen people write book proposals, it just feels like they've just got a whole random set of this, that, and no. And again, obviously you, Martin, and people at Lid will know, it's got to have a clear point of view, point of difference. So I'll write out my golden thread. It's usually, again, using the magic number three. So what are the three things that I think this book is going to be about, or the areas I want to cover? And then once I sort of get to that is about a page or so, I think there's a point where I realise, okay, there's something here. It's coherent, which is a word that I use a lot. The brain likes things that hold together. And then once I've done that, it's a process of looking at each of those sections, compiling stuff, putting them into those three boxes, and then I wouldn't say it writes itself, but I find it much easier once I've got all that hard work out of the way. And there's another book which, I've just submitted, which will be book eight, about putting the art back in marketing. And I'm even sort of thinking about book nine. So it's always when I get those things together, it's trying to make it gel and hold together and put in what needs to be, but also finding, what you need to take out because it just gets too confusing. So those are some of the main things that I always recommend to people.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really good advice, and yeah, hopefully it will help someone who is thinking of writing a book. But now let's talk about the classical marketing book. And why do you think marketers can learn a lot from the ancient Greeks and Romans?
Well, I think one of the things that I've always tried to do in my sort of writing and also just training and speaking is I think marketing and business is often very, very sort of inward looking. It's always looking at itself. It's looking at great companies or brands or leaders. And that's fine. And there are people, again, even within the Lid stable, who are really good at just looking at within the advertising, branding, communications world. But I think the area that I've sort of fallen into is I quite like bringing in ideas from outside because I think it makes us more interesting. I think it gives our brands or communications new ways of thinking. So again, when I worked in ad agencies as a planner, you realize if you're working on cars that all car ads look the same or mobile phones. And I think it was often because you were just so busy thinking about cars or phones or yogurts. So I've always been interested in bringing in things like science, behavioral economics, psychology. And I thought, well, actually, there's an awful lot we can learn and apply from, again, ancient Greece and Rome. And I didn't think it's too big a stretch because if marketing can take in, Daniel Kahneman, behavioral economics and psychology and cognitive neuroscience, it should be able to look at what Aristotle or Cicero said about how you persuade people, because an awful lot of the people that I write the books for and I work with are in the job of persuading people, to buy a brand or vote for a party or whatever. So that was always my sort of angle, that there was a sort of natural fit. So that's what I hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we look at the structure of the book, it's separated in three parts. So it's mythology, vocabulary, and persuasion. So I would like to briefly discuss each of them, starting with mythology. So could you share some of the myths that marketers can learn from?
Yeah, just on that three things, by the way, Taylor. I mean, I make a point in the book that MVP, you can look at it as two things. If you're a marketing or business, it'll probably stand for minimum viable product, which is what's the best product we can make. If, like me, you're interested in sport, it stands for most valuable player. So MVP fits quite well like that. So mythology, I mean, again, it's a point I make about the book right at the beginning is people say to me, oh, it's just dead languages and dead myths and, weird stuff. But I've been to see two lots of Oedipus at the stage in London. I saw Brie Larson in Elektra. I watched Jeff Goldblum in Chaos on Netflix. I watched Anthony Hopkins in Those About to Die. There are about a dozen books being written about Achilles or Medea. And you've got people like Mary Beard and Stephen Fry. So it's not exactly niche. And then I was also watching a program on Pompeii last night. So the point is, all of these stories and all of these myths may look like they're stuck in the distant past, but they're about understanding who we are. So I give examples, and I spend a lot of my time, probably a bit less than I used to now, on segmentation studies. So a lot of clients say, okay, how do we segment our audience? Different demographics or different age groups or by buyer types or attitudinal types. So one of the things I recommended in the mythology section was there are loads of Greek myths that you can use or characters you can use as a way of coming up with a new segmentation. So a cave, I gave seven or eight different characters. So there might be a group of your users who are like Apollo, who are serious and rational in control. There might be some who are more like Dionysus, who is all about emotions and pleasure and wine and enjoyment. There might be some who are like Odysseus, who are very complicated and devious. There might be people like Sisyphus, who just think everything is a matter of pushing stuff up a hill and it just comes down again. So I just thought, really, those are interesting ways of just bringing in, as I say, some thinking that you might think that's a little bit left field, but that's exactly what you want. You want some left field thinking to disrupt the way that you think about your brand or your segments. So that's just one way that I talked about myth in the book.
Yeah, I think you make a very interesting point about how, I mean, we don't really think about it, but we see mythology always every day, whether it's in arts or other communications, but we're not really good at actually adapting it to both today's marketing and
And
communication.
there's also a character from Greek myth called Proteus, who was able to shift shape. Now, again, when we talk about gender identities and fluidity, again, that's absolutely perfect. There are characters, for example, Tiresias, who is in Oedipus Rex, who changes sex. So a lot of those things that you think they're in the dim and distant past, they're not, because they're still essentially about who we are as human beings. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And then the second part of the book, which is about vocabulary, which I think probably a lot of people would think, well, why should we learn ancient Greek or Latin to be better at communicating? But you say that if we dip into the etymology of Greek and Latin, that can help us become more memorable and effective communicators. So could you explain why?
Yeah, anyone who even remotely knows me, Taya, knows that I'm obsessed with etymology and words. It's just, oh, since I was a child. And I don't know, I probably could write an entire book, actually, on etymology. But for me, again, it's just another way of looking at what lies beneath. Because again, as somebody, I've mentioned this, I used to be an account planner in ad agencies, and I still do some of that. And our job was understanding consumers or human beings, as I like to call them. And you're understanding why they choose a particular brand of car or why they eat a particular type of chocolate or why they go to a particular destination. So you're trying to understand sort of human motivation. And a lot of that is getting beneath the surface. So often I find that getting beneath the surface of words, again, just gives you interesting insights. And I've written, as you know, a book on insight as well. And one of the examples I use an awful lot, because I talk about storytelling, is the word author, because we know about authors. And I point out to people, look at the word authority, because that is the same root, it's the same etymology. It comes from the actual Latin word meaning to grow or increase, as in augment. But I always use that as a way of saying, why do I think storytelling is so important? Because we give authors authority. We trust people that tell us stories, whether they're writing books, or whether they're talking to us on a stage, or whether they're reading the news. We trust people that tell us stories. And again, I was just talking to some friends of mine the other day about behavioural economics, which I talk a lot about. And again, interestingly, we were talking about the word decide. And I said, do you know what the word decide comes from? And they no. I said, well, all the words that end in side, matricide, patricide, suicide, whatever, they all mean killing. Or literally to cut down, because that's the same idea. You cut down someone, you kill them. So decide literally means to cut off options. So every time you're deciding, you're cutting away options. It's like taking branches off a tree. Now, again, some people may think that's a bit too, flowery or whatever. Fine, okay, I understand that. But sometimes it just gives you another way of thinking about something that you take for granted. So that's the reason I keep banging on about etymology and words.
Yeah, no, I find this interesting because I mean a lot of marketers they're bound to their laptops for 8 hours a day. That just kills creativity sometimes. So I mean, yeah, if you can think differently about words, yeah, this could help.
Actually, I'll give you one other example, which I talked with about some friends last night for dinner. And we were talking about American elections and stuff, right? Because I've spent way too much time talking about America and Donald Trump. And the Americans have a word, we don't really use it in English very often, gubernatorial, which means an adjective to do with governor. So if there's a race or an election for governors in the US, which they have, the word they use is gubernatorial, which is just not very common in English English. And gubernare comes from the Latin word meaning to steer. Now, obviously, it's the same word as govern, that's where it comes from. But the original Latin word is steering a ship or piloting a ship. But then there's a whole nother thing which comes out of that. Because again, I was talking to this friend of mine, we were talking about computers and cybersecurity and all that sort of stuff. And again, the word that came before the Latin word, the Greek word, Kubernetes, is where we get cyber. All the words to do with cyber are to do with, again, steering and piloting. And a guy called Norbert Wiener invented cybernetics, I think in the 40s, 1940s. And he used that word deliberately because he thought computers and systems will steer where we're going with information. So you've got gubernatorial and cyber. Both come from the same root, but they both take into different directions. I'll stop talking about that now.
All right, no, I didn't know that. It's very interesting. But yeah, let's move to the final part of the book, which is persuasion. So in that part, you claim that ancients had much to teach us about the arts and science of persuasion. So could you share some of that wisdom?
I think probably in the storytelling book, or maybe the storytelling workbook, I talk about Aristotle. And he famously had three, and again, it's always threes, as you know, today, everything is three. And he said that persuasion was what he called ethos, logos, and pathos, which I always say to various people are not the three musketeers. Because ethos is the Greek word for sort of authority or credibility, and I talked about authority. So you need to have credibility to persuade people. And Aristotle was thinking mainly about the law courts, standing up and persuading people in the law courts. But also politically, if you're trying to persuade the Athenian council to make war against Philip or Alexander. So ethos was you've got to have that authority. Logos is a whole bundle of meanings, facts, information, message. If you like what we call in the behavioral economic system two stuff. But the one I often have to emphasize is pathos, which means emotions or feelings. And again, we see that in empathy, sympathy, pathological. They all come from that root. And the Latin equivalent of pathos is passio, passion, feeling. So those three things Aristotle said, you've got to have all of them to convince. And again, I just find it a really simple way of saying to clients or whoever, if you don't do all of those three, you're not doing it properly, whether it's the website, a logo, a piece of communications, internal, whatever. You've got to be able to do those three. But the other thing I've added and wrote quite a bit about is Cicero, Marcus Tullius Cicero, a very famous Roman lawyer, presenter, thinker, philosopher. And he had three different words in Latin, which again I wrote about. And they are delectare, docere, and movere, which for those of you who don't speak Latin, to delight, to inform or to prove, and to move. So he says docere to inform, and that's again what most brands that we our job is to inform people. Yeah, but it's not just that. The job is not just telling people why they should buy your product or service. That's easy. But he says movere, again, which means to move. And again, going back to etymology, motion and emotion, they're the same thing. We talk about in English move. I felt very moved by that music. I felt moved by that play. But the first one he says is delecto, which is to delight. And again, I think that's something that's worked in advertising for centuries. That's why I think good advertising works, because it delights people, it's actually entertaining. Again, I think that's something that we forget sometimes to our cost. And I work with many clients, and I often have to say to them, don't forget the entertainment bit. Your job, you have to, if you want to get people's attention, you don't just have to inform them, you don't just have to move them, you do have to entertain them. So those are some of the things that I talk about. And there's obviously a lot more in that section, but those, yeah, I think that'll do for now.
Yeah, fascinating. And I'm interested that what would you like to achieve with this book? What's your goal? What would you like marketers to do as a result of reading the book?
Do you know what? I think the three things that I've said from Cicero will probably do. I hope it informs them. I can prove to them that it's worth reading. I hope they feel moved by it. But also, I hope it delights them. I hope they actually enjoy. Because one of the things I've always hopefully managed to do, tried to do, and Lyd have been obviously very tolerant of me, try and write in a way that I think people will enjoy reading. Because I do think an awful lot of business books, clearly none published by Lyd, but an awful lot of business books can be quite dry and quite hard to read. And I wouldn't read them for pleasure. And I've had to review books. And read them so I know what it's like. And my feeling is always I'd like people to pick a book up, whether it's a station or a airport or whatever, look at it and go, okay, this looks like it might be enjoyable to read. I mean, enjoy it and then learn something from it. So that's always been my goal, and we'll see what people think.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think that's a great goal that you have for the book. So can you share with us some recent examples of campaigns or communications that cleverly used some of the wisdom from ancient Greece and Rome?
I mean, just to follow on from what I'm saying, I think really good brands, whether they know it or not, and I think a lot of creative people know what Aristotle or Cicero were saying, even if they didn't study it, they know what you have to do. You have to get emotions involved, you have to delight. And the great successful campaigns like Specsavers or Tesco or Apple or Nike, they sort of just know that. And equally, to turn your question around to you can see brands that don't understand that. And you look at a huge preponderance of stuff that we see, whether it's posters outdoors or on TV, and it just leaves you cold. And you want to say to them, look, whatever you're spending on your advertising, your communication, your websites, your logos, you're wasting it because it's just not cutting through. So a lot of it, I think, is you can see the companies that are sort of doing it well. But I might answer your question, do a politician's thing now, and answer a different question, which is I wrote about some brands that actually use sort of Greek or Roman names. So Nike, obviously, I'm sure many people do know by now. Nike was the Greek goddess of victory. So it was chosen deliberately. Because it's about winning, just do it. So Nike, Greek goddess of victory, there's a famous sculpture in, I think it's the Louvre now, the winged victory of Samothrace. And victory, as in Nike, it's a portrait of Nike or a statue of Nike. So that's one of the things I think a good brand. But going back to sort of brands, but also etymology or origins, talk about another sports brand is ASICS. I don't know how many anyone listening or is wearing ASICS, but you might have heard of ASICS. And whenever I ask people, do you know why it's called ASICS? Everyone says the same thing, which is, well, is it basics but without the B? No. No. Because what they did was Juvenal, who was a first century BC, CE, satirist, Roman satirist, he wrote Who Will Guard the Guards Themselves? And various other bread and circuses, he also said. But one of his famous sayings was a healthy mind in a healthy body. That's where it was first said. And he used the word mind as in mens, as in mental. So mens sana in corpore sano. But the people behind ASICS, it didn't work. So they swapped the word mens, mind, for anima, which means like soul or spirit. So ASICS actually stands for anima sana in corpore sano, a healthy spirit in a healthy body. Now, again, some people might just go, well, that's quite it. I do pub quizzes, right? So it's a great pub quiz question. But again, it's just like looking at what lies beneath and looking at why they've done that. And then if you work in branding or marketing, who knows, you might be able to use something like that on what you're working on. So that's, again, what I'm trying to do, just give people inspiration and insight that perhaps they didn't know that they needed.
Yeah, very interesting. You know, I used to be a volleyball player and ASICS was our chosen
Well, now
brand.
you know. There you go. Yeah. In fact, I realized the other day, because I started playing tennis again, and I didn't even know that my trainers were ASICs. And I was talking about them because I think I got rid of my old Nike. But anyway, from Nike to ASICs, so I'm keeping it in the, in the Greek and Roman tradition.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I used to love them, but yeah, I never really understood what the name meant. But right, so I've got one final question, Tas. So, what's next for you? I mean, you already mentioned you're writing another book, but is that it, or we can expect even more? Are there any interesting campaigns you're working on? Yeah, what's next for you?
Yeah, I'm still doing my mixed sort of portfolio of training and speaking. I'm doing a speech in September, doing various bits of training, which hopefully will happen next week. I don't know. Clients just changed their mind. But no, I'm still doing all that and I'm still writing. I'm trying to write. I want to write a spoof business book. And as you know, I've had some conversations with Martin about this. And I may write it anyway because I think it's time to write, because I do write bits for comedy. And over the years, I've been gathering bits and pieces in a folder. And I got various names for it, which I don't want to give out now. But I think the idea, whether I can write 27,000 words on it, but I think we need a book, especially in these difficult times, that just sort of makes fun a bit of all the nonsense and jargon and management consultant speak that we often find in sort of marketing and sales and communication. So that might be further down the line. But I really am hopeful that it will find a way of coming into existence, even if I have to write it myself. Yeah, so that's what's coming up in hopefully the near future.
Absolutely. Well, we're looking forward to it. But thank you very much for your time today, Tas. It was, as always, a pleasure to speak with you. And I encourage our listeners to grab a copy of the Quasco marketing book to read more about what we've discussed today. Thank you.
Pleasure, Sayers. Speak to you soon.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.